When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hello and welcome to Made by Mamas, the podcast. I'm Zoe.
And I'm Georgia.
And we're here talking all things parenthood, tips and tricks,
products we love,
and brands that we can't live without. Let's get into it.
So, nearly at the end of another week.
Oh, God. I'm still recovering from my supermarket experience yesterday. I just really had a bad time. And it was interesting because when I spoke about it on our Insta, there were hundreds of messages from people going, I hate going to the supermarket. People aren't even making eye contact anymore. You know what I'm like. I'm like, hello, how are you? People are just shuffling down the aisles.
It's weird.
The human touch is gone, hasn't it?
It's weird. Yeah, I mean, the only positive, right, from this is, so I went to go and get Gigi some nappies yesterday afternoon because I literally had none, like none. You know when you're like, oh my God, please don't do a poo, please don't do a poo, oh my God, don't do one, don't do one. And so I went to a retail park and there's a Boots and an Aldi, and usually that Aldi is awful. Like on a normal day, oh my goodness, like I have to psych myself up for going in, but I love going in there. And a benefit of social distancing is they're only letting so many people in that shop at one time. So there's no queues. Like obviously at the checkout, you haven't got to do the speed packing because there's not really anyone behind you, and you can walk around like quite nicely. So that's one positive that I will take away from social distancing at the supermarket, is that Aldi and places that are usually horrendous are actually all right.
Yeah, and you're right. And there's always positives to take from these things, and we can't be too down. I think it was just a bit of a slap in the face. And I think everybody's, you know, the first couple of weeks of lockdown, people were kind of bright and breezy and keeping positive. Yeah. And now we're really in the midst of it. I think there's just, I don't know, I just think I'm worried about what's going to happen when, in inverted commas, normal life, you know, comes back, because we're going to have to work really hard on that sort of interaction between strangers. I plan on saying hello to everybody that I see. Hello! Yeah. that's that bloody annoying woman that's just moved into the area.
But don't you think like people have been more social? Like, for instance, like our neighbours, we probably wouldn't have seen in normal circumstances. We probably would only see them like... do you know what? We hardly ever saw them before lockdown, not at all. But because we've been out in the garden and we've all been around, we've actually made friends with them. And it's been really nice, like just chatting over the fence. And that's been lovely.
Yeah. And do you know what people are doing up and down the country? They're turning their gardens into social distancing beer gardens with their neighbours. It's hilarious. The photographs are amazing. People are cutting like chunks out of their fences, flipping the piece of wood down and turning it into a bar.
Well, the other day, our neighbour was like, it was, I don't know what time it was in the afternoon, but he was just like mooching about and he was like, oh, guys, do you fancy an Aperol spritz? And we were like, oh, God, yes, please. And over the fence came two wonderful Aperol spritzes. And I was like, oh, my God, this is just lovely. I love it.
Your neighbour sounds amazing.
Yeah, they are. We actually are really lucky.
Oh, dreamy. Well, I'll tell you what else is going to be dreamy. Today's chat.
It is. Now,
it's a conversation that we've been wanting to have for a long time, but we really wanted to find the right person. And we've absolutely nailed it today with today's guests. So he's a GP. His day job is a GP. So he sees people for all different ailments and all different problems, but he specializes in sexual function. So lots of people, lots of mums go to him, you know, post giving birth to have the conversations around sex. It might be painful for them. They might have lost their confidence. They might not want to have penetrative sex anymore, you know, all of these questions that come up, and he specializes in it.
Yeah, I mean, he is amazing, and I literally cannot wait for everybody to listen to this.
And Georgia, you did so well. Just before we get into it, you did so well, because you know what? Some people find it really easy to talk about sex. Me, other people, you know, want to keep it a lot more private, and that's you, and that's absolutely fine. But this one wasn't really a conversation around sex. It was more about sort of the way that the body, the anatomy, and the way that the female body is formed, and everything that happened during labor and afterwards. It was fascinating.
It really was.
And we did talk about dildos, so I'm happy.
We did, yeah.
Right, today's guest is Anand Patel. Let's get into it. Happy Friday. Another Friday, another expert podcast coming your way today. And this one, oh, it's going to be a goodie. So today we're over the moon, completely thrilled that we have managed to have a chat with this wonderful man. His name is Anand Patel. He is a GP. He's a sexual function doctor. He has his own podcast, The Pleasure Podcast, which he hosts with writer and actor Naomi Sheldon. So yeah, let's talk about sex, baby, shall we?
Hello. Lovely to meet you both.
Last time we talked about sex on the podcast, Zoe burst into song and we were singing, let's talk about sex, baby, let's talk about you.
Let's do it. I mean, I'm like the sprawling over salt and pepper. I'll be Cinderella. You two can be salt and pepper.
Anand, welcome. Thank you so much for coming on today. Listen, before we get into it, could you just tell us a little bit about who you are and what it is exactly that you do?
Yes. So my day job is a general practitioner. So I see patients, you know, kids, mums, dads, everyone, about everything. I'm currently seeing a lot of coronavirus. The rest of the time, I'm a sexual function doctor. So that is not sexual health, which is looking after sexually transmitted diseases or infections. But I look after erectile dysfunction, painful sex, orgasm problems, relationship issues, that kind of thing. And that's what keeps me sort of super interested and really brings sort of a bit of specialist knowledge back into my day job. So I have lots of patients who, for example, are either recent mums, or they're going through the menopause, or they're having painful sex. And being able to have that knowledge and bring it back into my day-to-day work is brilliant.
That's really interesting. So do you see a lot of mums come to you after they've given birth and perhaps just don't feel confident, or they're having issues with having sex again? What's the, you know, common problems that you see?
I think the first thing that you see is people's expectations of when to have sex.
Yeah.
So, you know, you've just given birth, and the first time I normally see sort of mums after giving birth is the 6-week check. I appreciate, you know, your listeners will probably know this very well. You know, you're checking on the health of the baby and just making sure that actually nothing physically is an issue there. But you're also checking on the health of the mum. And are there physical issues, particularly post-delivery? Because if we're thinking about, you know, a third of women after delivery are incontinent of urine. So, you know, it's about asking questions to tease out, you know, what are the issues going on? Because just looking at someone with their baby, you know, without asking any questions doesn't give you a very good idea of what's going underneath the surface. So you've kind of got to make them feel comfortable first, and then go into, you know, once they're comfortable with you, talking about, you know, their emotions, about their mood, because obviously that can change so significantly. After all, those pregnancy hormones drop significantly. Talking about their physical state. So, you know, how is it down below? You know, is their vagina sized? Did they have to have an episiotomy? Did they have to, did they tear? Did they have any stitches? Are they incontinent now? All of these questions that are super personal. Yeah. However, a lot of my women patients just go, look, you can ask me anything. I've had multiple hands at my vagina now. I literally am relaxed about this now. And you think, well, that's a great place to have got to. Mm. You know, you only wish that people could be like that all the time.
Mm. So, Anand, we did a podcast that went out this week with TV presenter Natalie Pinkham talking about birth. You know, in some cases, I mean, look, let's be honest, birth is a pretty intense thing to go through. There's lots of physical changes that happen with the body. And then we, as mums, then go to the doctor. We get our 6-week check, and in some cases we get signed off straight away, and then we come back home, and, you know, and then that whole, you know, SEX thing is very much there. And, you know, just because you get a tick from the doctor doesn't necessarily mean that you feel ready to then just jump back in. So do you see a lot of kind of women who are suffering with confidence issues in those kind of early months? And how do you and kind of encourage them or support them to feel like themselves again?
So first of all, you're absolutely right. You know, you've had some significant physical changes. Your vaginal tissues and your pelvic floor have just had a baby pass through them. So they've done a lot of work and they've been stretched or torn or sewn up in the past few weeks. So that's not necessarily ideal for sex. I think it's letting people know that your body will almost always heal. Now there is where actually the tearing is quite significant, or you know, some people have a third degree tear, which is very unfortunate, where it goes all the way to the anal margin. So yeah, those are very rare these days due to sort of early intervention. But actually those things can happen. And so recognizing that not all women's birth experiences are the same. Mm. I mean, I recognize I'm also a man talking about women delivering, and obviously I don't have that sort of experiential knowledge, but I certainly work with women who've had this, and that changed very much of their vagina and vulva, which is where some women really have a sense of their sexual power, is a really big deal.
Yeah.
It also changed its appearance. You know, they may have, you've got a big baby and a womb sat down below, which means the blood flow coming back from your lower body is going to be slower. So you get engorgement of the genital tissues.
Yeah.
Sometimes that's super exciting during pregnancy because orgasms are easier and it's all more sensitive. In other women, it's the opposite and it was less sensitive. And it's actually, or in some people, very uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. Now, but actually that change and that swelling doesn't necessarily go away. So actually it can look different. And it can feel different. And obviously a baby's pushed its way through. Does that mean that the vaginal canal feels different to you and to your partner? Now, I think some people go, oh no, it's much looser. And you're going, well, actually a vagina's not, it's a potential space. It's not actually its own canal there, if that makes sense. It's a space that's there, it's sort of pushed into by the penis or any other object, or pushed out of for a baby. So it's about thinking about going, yes, you can train the muscles around that space. And that's really important as well. Making people think, actually, this is a bit of a, it's a bit of a machine, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
That there are ways of actually tweaking and training your machine to get back to the state that you want to be in. But on the flip side of that, recognizing you have just done an amazing, incredible thing. You've birthed a baby, and recognizing your body may not be the same. The landscape you explore physically is not the same. And the way you feel about your vagina or vulva or sex may not be the same. And that's also true for your partner. Your partner may have witnessed this baby come out of your vagina.
Yeah.
And actually will be thinking, either they may go and deify you and think you're the best thing ever and good Lord, you know, how have you done this? But actually they've deified you in a slightly sort of religious sense. And actually you're thinking, well, you know, nun sex isn't the most exciting. You know, you don't necessarily have sex with your mum.
Yeah, you still want your partner to think of you as sexy, even though they've seen you do something that is, to most, quite unsexy.
Exactly. Exactly that. And yeah, it could have been traumatic. It could have been really scary for the guy, you know, or whoever, the partner who's witnessed that. And it must have been really scary for you or the person that's giving birth. So I think it's about just both people communicating appropriately beforehand, going, look, what are we going to be like afterwards? You know, setting expectations. I might not want to have sex for a few months afterwards.
Yeah.
My libido might be lower. It might be higher. I've no idea. My vulva, which you always tell me how pretty it is, it might look different.
Mm.
My orgasm might be different. The way my skin feels might be different. And it's about having those honest conversations beforehand so you're slightly prepared. I appreciate nothing can really prepare you for having a screaming baby in the house and not sleeping and your hormones being all over the shop and then having family and friends and books and people on TV telling you how you should parent. But there is no sort of practice run for all of that. So I recognize it's a challenging place that you put yourself into, and then you're expected to be the sexy being on top of that. It's just hopefully reducing those expectations, going, look, I may not be able to be that person, and that's fine.
Mm. It's really interesting that you touched on sexual power, because for me personally, before I had my kids, that was kind of, you know, I'm a Scorpio. I'm very much run on sexuality. I've always been, you know, interested and intrigued by sex and, you know, had different partners and, you know, just been kind of experimental with it all. And then, you know, once Dozer and I had had Luna together, my first, I remember that moment where my friend said, well, you know, you need to have a look at your vagina. You need to have a look at your vulva. And I was like, I don't think I can do that. And I remember that moment that I took a compact and looked at it, and I was absolutely horrified because it didn't look like I remembered it. And I suddenly felt this real wave of, I don't know, it sounds silly really to say it, but maybe sadness or anxiety or just worry that it was never going to be the same again. And I actually think quite a lot of women go through that, that it doesn't feel the same. It doesn't look the same. It, you know, the sensitivity might have changed. It's a lot to get your head around because it's your body. It's what you've known forever.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, you've been used to this way of behaving, this way of feeling for, you know, say 20 years. Say you've been at birth, you know, 30, 35 or however old you are. You know, you've had a significant period of your adult life feeling that way. You know, having sex a certain way, potentially negotiating sex a certain way, you know, having predominantly penetrative sex, I imagine. I mean, that seems to be the norm, but heterosexual sex seems to be mostly intercourse rather than outercourse. But actually, there's this whole universe of other sex practices that are available to you. And for example, if you've had a painful sex experience, you know, sort of birth experience, and things aren't quite healed down there, or it doesn't feel right in there at the moment, you're not feeling, you know, you're feeling intercourse just isn't on the menu.
Yeah.
There's like a whole smorgasbord of genital tissue that isn't your vagina. And when I don't know if you've talked about anatomy. I mean, it's even interesting to you, but I could get obsessed about it. Because it's like, you know, women are blessed with all of their sexual fun parts on the surface.
Yeah.
You see what I mean? It's like everything is completely available at your fingertips. It's like a pad, you know, almost, of just run your fingers over it. And there's so many different sensitive areas. And if you think about the clitoris, it's like the bell end of a penis. And then you've got the shaft of the penis. And actually, if you imagine the shaft is divided into two around the vagina, so around the hole. Because actually those tubes swell full of blood, creating sort of hovercraft, sort of cushion effect, which generously flushes and gives often women a sort of lovely sort of full sensation. But the head, also the clitoris, also rises up and swells and appears from its foreskin. I mean, I used to teach, I used to be a school teacher, and I used to teach sex ed, and I was teaching this to my kids, and they were going, oh my God, she's got a mini. And you're like, well, yes, or we've got a maxi clit. I don't know how you want to put it, but. Yeah, I mean, our testicles are only basically ovaries that have just fallen into a wrinkly sack.
It's so interesting, isn't it?
That is so interesting. I've never heard anyone speak of it like that at all, and it's kind of blowing my mind a bit. Now I'm a bit confused.
No, but I think it's really important to recognise, and that's why I'm a real geek about this, but I think fetal reproductive anatomy is extraordinary, and I know that sounds like a really weird thing to think about it, but if you're thinking about the effect of estrogen versus testosterone in the womb, and it is basically marinating this body, and it's switching on, and genes are being switched on and switched off, depending on, you know, whether you're releasing testosterone or estrogen, and this is actually creating massive changes, but mainly in your genitals. You know, you're by default female. But actually, if you just change a bit of hormones around, switch on a few more genes, the shape of the genitals changes. It doesn't change their purpose, and it doesn't change what they can really do. They all are there for both pleasure and for, you know, for making babies, if you want that. So the fact that we are so similar is actually really important in terms of, well, one, sex ed for kids,
yeah,
you know, just learning. Are so similar. Also for young people learning about having sex and going, look, it's not just about sticking your penis in something or a toy in something. There's all this else going on that you can play with and enjoy. And also for the woman or person with a vulva going, happy days, look what I've got.
Yeah.
I've got the area around my vagina called the vestibule, which is like they're called the waiting room, which is hugely sensitive. You've got the skin of the labia, which is hugely sensitive. You've got the clitoris, the clitoral hood. You know, you've got all of these, you know, the perineum, which is just, you know, your taint, for a better word. You've got all of these areas to play with. So just absolutely use all of them. So if sex is painful after pregnancy, after delivery, and you're thinking, oh, I don't necessarily want to try that, really say that. Please don't just say, oh, he needs to have his conjugal rights. That sort of thing drives me insane.
Mm.
Stop doing what hurts. I mean, pain is a really good sign. Yeah. Going, let's not do this. Mm. So let's just externally. I mean, one of the things I like talking about is, as you say, your view of your body has changed. And some people are very regretful about that. They feel very sad about the body they've lost. And I think part of that is also nudity. So if you've been used to being naked around someone before, often people, when they've had a baby, they notice the changes in their body and they feel a sense of shame. And so they cover that body or they hide that body.
Yeah.
Actually, I would suggest exposing that body, because it's only being naked and seeing that naked version every day that you and the person that you're with, or persons, depending on what your relationship structure is, will come to actually normalize and acclimatize.
Yes.
Yeah.
You'll both get used to your being naked and you looking like that. Things become less foreign and less unusual.
Yeah. And I guess less daunting.
Absolutely. Absolutely. If someone has seen your breasts that have changed shape, they're bigger, they might be a bit lower on your chest, the nipples might be further apart, they might have changed color. You know, who knows what changes you've experienced? But actually, if you recognize that and you play with that rather than worrying about it, that's such a joyful place to be in. And as we all know, you need to be relaxed to have sex, and you need to be relaxed for your pelvic floor to relax for you to have comfortable sex.
Yeah.
You need to have arousal, you know, so you have all that blood flow pumping to your genitals. And there's a fabulous study done by the Sex Lab, and it's actually called that in Portugal, where they did a study for women where they, I think it was vaginal plethysmography. I may have got that wrong. Forgive me if I have all those scientists out there, where you basically measure the pressure changes within the vagina. And they can tell on that basis how vaginally aroused or how much vaginal blood flow is as a sort of comparator for arousal. And they found that women are really bad at judging if they're brain aroused, they often have no correlation with genital arousal. Wow. If they're genital locating, they've often got no idea that they're turned on. So actually, if there is this disconnect that's going on, we need to learn to kind of facilitate that connection. Yeah. One is our own bodies and our own groins, and knowing, this tingly feeling, that rush. And Naomi, my co-host, she describes it as a Swayze, one of those lovely Patrick Swayzes in the genitals. Really good sort of fullness or tingling or sort of pleasure within there that kind of makes you think, that's what I'm feeling. So if you're in tune with that before you deliver, perhaps after you deliver, you can kind of get to feel that similar sensations. I won't necessarily say it's going to be the same, but if you're feeling your own sort of connection physically, perhaps you can go on to do that with your partner. If, however, your breasts are engorged because you're breastfeeding, they might be more sensitive or less sensitive or leaking. You know, that can be embarrassing for some people. I just say, play on it. You've just given birth. You've got a baby. This is incredible. As it's incredible, celebrate your leaking breasts as incredible.
So do you think some women almost like downplay how they're feeling? So they might, you know, they might have a kiss with their husband or whatever, and then they do feel a bit turned on, but other things come into their mind. So they're almost, it's like their brain is shutting it off. Or do you think they just don't know that they're turned on?
I think there are lots of issues in terms of cultural structures, religious structures, social structures, patriarchal structures that all sort of intertwine into producing the person that we are based on our love maps and our relationship maps. I mean, I don't know if you've talked about this sort of interest. So John Money was a psychologist, I believe, and he was looking at why we develop the attractions we do. And so he developed this thing that your cultural upbringing, the religion you were brought up in, the media you were reading, your friends, your family relationship, your parents, their relationship was a real marker for how you develop to see what a relationship should be.
Yeah.
That then affects who you think you are as a sexual being. But also, you then produce this love map of who this other person is. So you project onto this other person who they're meant to be, which is often why you feel let down often. It's because you're expecting them to behave like you think they should be behaving. Mm. So again, after you've delivered, you've got to change your physical map of what your body feels like. What does your landscape feel like? But also, what is this new person, this other person, what are they feeling about your body? So the communication thing becomes hugely important. It's also really quite terrifying for people. If you've not really talked about bodies and sex and how you're going to have sex and what gives you pleasure before, trying to bring it up becomes really, can feel to some people as challenging. But I would really suggest doing so, because it's that real place of freedom. If you can get to the place where you can kind of go, actually, that isn't what's really working for me now for the moment, perhaps we could try it like this. You know, or I love it if you do this. I mean, if you make something a positive to another person, particularly someone who's giving you sexual pleasure, they generally puff up a bit and they repeat that action. Go, oh, look, that thing you're doing is brilliant. Carry on. Oh, when your arm brushed this part of me, it was really exciting. Can we try that?
So we'll be back right after this.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Baffled, a brand new podcast bringing you some amazing facts that are complete nonsense.
Imagine the likes that would get on Instagram, you having a quick one up a lamppost on the moon. Incredible.
So you basically saying the reason the dinosaurs stopped living is because they all collectively made a decision to have no more children.
They're talking, I think until 10 years ago, I still shared the bathwater that my parents were in.
You can find us wherever you got this podcast. Just search for Baffled Amazing Facts.
Now, let's pick up where we left off with our wonderful guest.
Georgia, I mean, I don't know about you, but I definitely went through this for a very long time where, you know, I went from this place of being, you know, as I've talked about, quite a sexual being, to then having my children and then just feeling quite numb for about 3 years. I was going through the motions, but I was having to build myself up to it every single time. And I was like, I don't understand why this is happening to me, because it used to come quite easy for me. Even looking in the mirror at my body, my new body, which I now love, it took me a long time to love it again. But when it came to having sex with Dozer, I just wasn't communicating with him what I wanted, what I needed. I didn't even know what I wanted or needed because it was so painful sometimes. And it's only now that I've really had this awakening to my sexual self again. And it's taken a lot of work. And like you said, Anand, a lot of communication. And things are different now. But I'm having better sex now than I did when I was single and before my children.
And I think that's hopefully where everyone gets to be, that actually they come to terms with their new body and they're coming to terms with their new body. And they come to terms with the fact that actually you are going to have to communicate because you're having to deal with this baby. And that requires a lot of effort and communication. And hopefully using that tool and going, actually, that communication doesn't just stop with the baby. It actually can follow through into our sex lives. And actually, I tell you when I don't like the way you're tying that nappy. So why can't I tell you that I don't like the way that you kiss me?
Yeah.
The way that you touch me with the back of your hand on my inner thigh, which used to be super exciting, now doesn't feel that way. Could we just change this up a bit? And it's about depersonalizing it. If you make it about you, then actually it's less personal to the other person. It's less dismissive. It's not like you're a failure. It's you're not saying that. You're saying, actually, my body likes this. And then actually, it's then hopefully for the other person, it becomes a pleasure to actually act out what the other person enjoys.
Are we scared to hurt the other person? Are we scared to hurt our partners? Is that why we can't communicate?
Yeah,
I think so. I mean, I imagine, you know, if you're a straight man or you know you're in a lesbian relationship or whatever, if you are you're used to penetrating, and if you're used to inserting something, you know, in a vagina, and that's what was your sex life, but actually it's, you know, where a baby has come out of and you saw the tear and you saw the stitches, all of those things are fresh in your mind. Why would you, you know, if you love someone, why would you want to hurt them?
Yeah. So actually,
a natural urge not to do, you know, not to have sex for some people. I mean, other people, they're just like hop back on and you're like, hello, you might want to wait for a second. Let's talk about contraception.
Yeah. Going to my 6-week check and the doctor being like, right, so should we talk about contraception? I was thinking to myself, that is the last thing in the world that you need to worry about with me right now.
Absolutely. And for most people it is. It's totally right. You're thinking, a lot of women look at me going, that's so not happening. And then I've got other women going, oh, no, we've been having sex for 3 weeks. And I'm like, okay. And then they just laugh. And I was going, yeah, good on you. Is it uncomfortable?
Yeah.
And then they go, yeah, it is actually a bit. And actually just opening that door for them to find it a bit funny and a bit silly and a bit playful is actually really helpful in us having that conversation.
Yeah.
I mean, I also wanted to talk about, if you don't mind, just about getting used to each other's bodies again.
Yeah.
Because it's
I was going to ask actually, was about before, you know, having sex again and getting your sex life back, building your relationship back up again. Because I know like a lot of people, especially after their first babies, they're sort of trying to navigate this new life, and having a relationship with their partner kind of comes bottom of the list as they're trying to work out how the hell you look after a baby, how it fits into your new life and all of that. And then it kind of gets sidelined, the whole relationship side of it. And so like, how do you go about that and building that back up?
I think first of all, is having the conversation with your partner, my baby will come first. And I think that has to be acknowledged in some ways, initially at least, because there is a whole thing of evolutionary primacy. You know, we are designed to change our allegiance in some way to the.
Yeah.
That's where we get our intimacy, our cuddles from. So if you were used to getting your intimacy and cuddles from your partner, and actually one of those ways of gaining intimacy was by having sex with them, you can get all the intimacy you ever want. Like a baby is like an everlasting supply of cuddles and intimacy and potentially pleasure and joy. Mm. And you don't have sex. Because for some women, sex isn't that pleasurable. Either because they've never had the conversation going, well, actually, could sex feel different or look different for me? Or actually, it's, you know, they might be a little bit more asexual. You know, they may not have a huge sex drive and they might not have huge sexual pleasure. I mean, that's a smaller proportion of people, but you know, up to 50% of women report sexual function problems. So it's not a small proportion. So, and these are not going to magically go away once you've delivered. In fact, in some people, they're magnified.
Yeah.
The idea about getting used to your nudity is a really important one. So if you can be naked around the house, and some people find that culturally or religiously difficult, particularly in front of children, you're thinking, well, I think that's because we've gone and conflated nudity with sex.
For me, I'm just cold if I do
that. I'm Georgia, but you hate me.
Well, that's very good. Turn into the central heating hotel. I appreciate that. For the environment. Let's go for the summer. So have a summer baby and have the central, just walk around the house. Let your family see you naked as a normal thing, and it's not a shameful thing, because that's such a good lesson for kids. I came from a very, very sort of religious, very uptight, sort of wonderful family, don't get me wrong. But I mean, I think I've seen my dad naked once en passant, because I passed him in a sort of bathroom cubicle when we're at a sort of a hotel or something. That's it. Never else in my life have I seen him nude.
Mm.
And actually, you know, and my mum, obviously, I've never seen my mother nude. Whereas my partner, honestly, he just walks around the house naked all the time. You're like, could you just put some clothes on?
Oh, it's nice. It's so nice. Does is the same. He's naked all the time.
I like the briefs, like sort of holding me up a little bit, to be honest. But personal thing, isn't it? It's a personal thing. But I think also part of it is my embarrassment at being naked. And therefore, the problem is, if you always get embarrassed with being naked, trying to then have a conversation after you've delivered about let's be naked is challenging. But if you can have that conversation and just naturally bring it into your day-to-day, the other thing that you can do is actually explore each other's bodies. Because if you're moving into a place where actually sex is a bit painful, why don't we just explore the rest of our bodies? Because there is so much sexual contact that goes on that isn't just our genitals. And there's one thing that a friend of mine tried in the past called vulval gazing.
Oh, yes. I don't know if you've... I've heard of this.
Yes. So you kind of just admire the vulva of the other person. So either you sit between their legs or you lie between their legs and you just look at it. Now, usually the first few minute or two is utterly excruciatingly embarrassing.
George is absolutely dying here. I can feel it.
I am cringing. I'm crossing my legs so tight.
You wouldn't even know. Well. You're doing so well.
George, I heard that you were much more like me. You're much more like the sort of prim and proper one. Is that right? Or is that wrong?
Absolutely. Of the two of us, absolutely.
Apologies. Okay. So literally you're basically my other half. So that's
yes.
Fine.
Yeah, exactly.
I am still in lots of ways very prim and proper, but actually being nude, and this, so I don't have a vulva, but let's move back to people with vulvas. So they're being observed and they are looking at you. And if you are and not touching, just observing. Now, the idea is after a couple of minutes, the person being observed will become less anxious because your adrenaline levels can only be high for so long before they dip.
Yeah.
You know, when you're in an exam and you can't be stressed for so long, eventually within the exam, you just finally calm down. That's because you've had enough of that adrenaline. Mm. Your body is now sensitized to it and desensitized to it. So it's got used to that adrenaline being there. So you will actually calm down and feel more relaxed with this person staring at your vulva, which sounds like an odd sentence to be in, but there you are. You'll be more relaxed and they will therefore be able to look for longer. And the longer you can tolerate, the more relaxed you will be being naked in their presence. Also for the other person, it can be a massive turn on. It can be hugely exciting to be staring at this, you know, one sort of buffet of pleasure, but also this part of someone that has just given birth. You know, it's an extraordinary thing. It's an act of sort of physical worship. And I think that's a sort of glorious place to be in.
I love that. I think that's brilliant. And I think that's a really nice place. I mean, obviously it sounds quite intense. And if you're kind of listening to this wincing and thinking, I don't think I could let my partner stare at my vulva. It's just about kind of opening up that moment between the two of you where actually you probably take words out of it for a second and you just be together. And I think as a mother, there's a certain sense of, we always have to be doing other things. Oh, I can't be having sex or having an orgasm because I've got to do this and I've got to unload the washing machine, or, you know, I think I can hear my baby stirring, or I need to go and do this, or need to wash the bottles. And it's actually like, it's okay to put all of that other stuff down and focus on you. As a mum, we never do it. And I think Georgia, you'll back me on this to say that actually it's more than okay to put yourself first sexually for a while, just to kind of find out who you are again. You need to have that time.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, yeah, as a mother in general, not even just sexually, we do this, we come bottom of the list, don't we? We put everybody else before ourselves. And you can only really do that for so long before it just becomes too much. So I guess it's just tipping that balance, isn't it? And making yourself, you know, feel better and rediscovering who you are again, I guess.
I mean, there's two big things here, isn't there? There's basically patriarchy and capitalism. And I know that sounds odd to bring into vulval gazing, but capitalism in the sense that actually your time has to mean something all the time. Are you doing the cleaning? Are you doing a job? Are you on the phone with someone, sort of making money? Are you doing something at all times? Because otherwise it's not valuable. Mm. And it's important to recognize pleasure is not optional. Pleasure is a hugely important part of our being. That's why we are physically designed the way that we are. You know, three major groups of mammals can enjoy sex for pleasure, and there's bonobos, dolphins, and us. And that must be for a reason.
Wow.
You know, it's meant to be a pleasurable, joyful thing. So why are we changing it to this thing that's shameful? Or actually, you can only sneak in when you're not doing what otherwise people would name as profitable or valuable things.
Yeah.
I think it's so important to take the time to nourish your relationship together and recognize that half an hour that you spent staring at her fanny was actually an utter delight. You know, it was a very profitable thing in terms of our relationship. You know, time should be thought of as a space that, yes, you know, you do need to live, and I recognize that you need the money to get things, to pay for your bills and to pay for your food. But actually, the biggest thing is making sure you've got time for your other half, or another, you know, the number of people you have sexually in your life, so that you can actually furnish that part of you and keep that going. Because you haven't stopped being you sexually just because you've had a baby. Like to say, people have been ill and are now ill, for example, they have cancer. They've not stopped being that sexual person. They are still that person. And so it's about how do you carry that on.
Anand, I wanted to sort of touch on the sort of benefits of using lube, because I think after you've had your kids and stuff, you know, things can kind of change, obviously, as we've discussed down there. And actually, you know, if you are experiencing painful sex, what would be like a good kind of initial sort of, like, not starter kit, that sounds a bit a PG-13 entrance to kind of lube, and maybe some sex toys just to kind of sort of jazz things up a bit?
Absolutely. So there's sort of there's two main groupings of painful sex, if that makes sense. There's sort of external or superficial. So basically, it hurts when the penis is broaching the vagina, and there's deeper, where it feels more uncomfortable when penetration is deeper inside. Now, there's a lot of overlap, so, you know, don't get it wrong. It's just when you're thinking about helping people or treating people, it can be quite helpful to divide into those two groups. So if it's very frontal, so basically that's the first inch or two of the canal, then that's often related to vaginismus or vestibular dynia. So they're just basically either where the skin is hypersensitive, and that can be hypersensitive positively, but sometimes too much positive stimulation can make people feel a bit cringy. You know, when I don't know if you may have felt this yourself, but if you've got an area of skin that's just recently healed, either it can really tingle and be overly sensitive, or it can be a bit numb.
Yeah.
And women can get those after delivery. And so if their vulva, you know, is tingly or hypersensitive or undersensitive, that can obviously be uncomfortable. So one way of that is focusing on the outside. So not stressing people out by making them go, oh, we're definitely going to, there's going to be penetration here. That's what's going to happen. Actually taking that away, going, actually, we're not going to do penetration at all. Mm-hmm. That will actually allow some relaxation in the first place. It will allow you to be hopefully more aroused because you know the painful thing isn't going to happen. And therefore you'll relax more, your pelvic floor will relax more. So that's the other thing. You know, our pelvic floors were, you know, designed to be back walls, not floors. And so, you know, the passage of time, pressure, and a baby through them does change them. But it doesn't mean that they can't necessarily be worked back up to a sort of muscular state again.
Yeah.
So, you know, doing Kegel exercises, etc., will over time will help. But actually, you will then get more sensation as well. So when you are squeezing on anything that is going into your the vulva, that will be more sort of pleasurable for you and potentially for your partner. But to focus on getting the, if you're able to relax your pelvic floor, so obviously one of the things of working out your pelvic floor is basically a contraction and relax. So
yeah,
you're working your pelvic floor, you're actually doing both. So you're getting better at both, if that makes sense, right? You've got external discomfort. What some people do, for example, is they just focus on the clitoris and the vulva, and that's absolutely fine. You can use high frequency vibrators. So if you find your clitoris feels a little bit more, a little less sensitive than it used to, then that's absolutely fine, because if you use a higher frequency vibrator, like you can buy these sort of, they're almost like little pocket rockets. So they're often disguised as lipstick-looking devices, and you get them, you know, online from lots of different providers. I would get one with the changeable speed setting, because you might have found that actually the highest speed setting before delivery was actually too high, but actually now you might find if you are less sensitive, it's the thing that actually gets you off.
Yep.
So actually thinking about that during sex, going, look, you know, it might not be painful to have sex, but actually I'm not orgasming as easily. Why not use a clitoral stimulating sex toy whilst having penetrative sex? Alternatively, if sex is uncomfortable, use a, you saw that that wonderful device that Samantha used in Sex in the City.
Yeah.
It basically had this, it was called a Hitachi Love Wand, and it was designed as an ultrasound massage thing. And actually, obviously, women were like, hello, let's just move this a couple of feet lower and see what the massage does on our genitals. And an entire series of sex toys has been born. Now, your Hitachi Love Wand sounds like Scalextrics in the next room. It's really it's very loud, basically. It sounds like a very loud, high buzzing noise. But there are much quieter ones. Now, Love Wands, basically, it's like a microphone. So imagine your sort of Mariah Carey microphone with sort of a bulbous head where you can change the frequency at the head, sort of stimulates and sort of vibrates. Now, if you put that on your genitals, that is heaven. Now, if you're finding actually careful, why not use the head of that vibrating against your vulva, against your labia, against your vestibule, which is the area directly around the vagina itself? Then actually you don't have to have painful sex, because it's so bloody lovely stimulating those areas in their entirety. And because it vibrates, it sends stimulation further into the pelvis, which also allows you to relax more.
Right.
Has a positive virtuous cycle. So it makes your genitals are more flush with blood, which makes it more comfortable. You're more relaxed. And actually it's yummy feelings on the outside. So happy days. So that's if you want to avoid intercourse. But and I don't mean avoid in a bad way. I'm just saying you're keeping away from what's painful.
Yeah, you're just not ready for that yet.
Absolutely. The other thing is also using a bit of lubricant to get something inside you. And I know that's the point of the question. I apologize, I'm going on. So there are some fabulous lubricants lots of are available, but I particularly like the Yes company of lubricants, because they are vaginally pH matched for vaginal play.
Do you know what? When I had a mummy MOT, the women's physio gave me that brand.
Oh my God, George has got lube.
What? I don't know. I don't know.
not have things. I just don't talk about
it. Oh, for goodness sake, send it to me if you're not going to use it.
She didn't say that.
No. Sorry, Adnan, you're right.
I was the quiet ones. You've got to watch. So there are other brands are available. Just for example, things like KY jelly, they're fine for physically examining people in a sort of clinical environment. They become very dry very rapidly and very sticky. They're not actually very pleasant to have sex with. Alternatively, you can use silicone lubricants, but silicone lubricants don't work with certain sex toys.
Right.
Just the same with all lubricants. So it's just about thinking about what does the packet say in terms of the lubricant I should be using. Most times a water-based lubricant will work with everything. So that's kind of your go-to one.
And what about if you don't have any lube in the house? Can you use the coconut oil that you cook the kids' dinner with? That's not a joke.
I know, and I'm tweeting that not as a joke. Don't you worry. I used to work with kids. I used to ask amazing questions all the time. But I wouldn't use anything with scent for a start or anything, and therefore coconut oil is very highly scented. I mean, if you're putting something into your vagina, you've got to recognize your vagina is made acidic on purpose by your body to try and prevent the growth of bacteria or parasites that cause that sort of fishy smell that you get with bacterial vaginosis.
Yeah,
that's because they've been washing internally and washing out their protective bacteria that make it a very low pH. If you go and put in loads of lube that's a high pH or a standard pH, it's going to make it less acid, which is potentially going to make those problems occur.
Right.
So I'd always recommend something, if you can, that's pH matched. And that's and that basically just means how acid or not it is. And because you've got, yes, vaginal, yes, VM, I think it's called, that's actually pH matched for the vagina, you can then use that. And you know that will be the same acidity as your vagina, so it's unlikely to cause any bacterial changes.
Amazing.
So that's the getting one that back. You can also get Yes But, which is, as you might appreciate, for anal play. And if you're finding vaginal play uncomfortable, some people have anal sex instead. I would say please always use lubricant for anal sex. I know some people amazingly think it's not necessary. However, they've probably never been on the receiving end of a penis going into your anus. Yeah. It's be uncomfortable if you're not prepared and you've not used lube. So please start with something small and work your way up. The other thing with anal play is just to recognize if you've delivered a baby, you may well have hemorrhoids.
Yeah.
What you were used to prior to, I mean, I appreciate lots of women are not having anal sex. I understand that. But it is, for a smaller proportion, part of their sexual repertoire. I would just be careful if you have got hemorrhoids, it's more likely to cause discomfort or bleeding.
Okay. That's
so a lot and giving yourself time. Is a probably good idea. Sorry, I'm probably making Georgia squeamish now.
No, she's fine. She's handling this really well.
I'm actually fine.
It's actually fascinating because, do you know what?
It is.
That's why we wanted to have this conversation with you today, actually, Anand, because this isn't, oh yeah, oh, how many times have you done it? And what's the best blowjob you've ever given? This is not what this podcast is about. You know, we really want to normalize all aspects of motherhood, and this is part, and fatherhood. This is part of it, and this is a big deal because okay and what felt nice before, you know, might not feel nice now, and it's about rediscovering yourself again. And I think both Georgia and I have definitely been on that journey. I think for anybody listening, just kind of on a sort of parting note, Anand, if anybody is really sort of struggling, you know, sexually to find their confidence and to feel kind of, in inverted commas, normal again, would you say that the first step is to just communicate with their partner?
Absolutely, just talk to each other and be honest with each other in your communication. And I recognize that's really hard and it makes people feel vulnerable. But it is a learned art. The more you talk to each other, the more you'll not say the hurtful things that sometimes people start off with.
Yeah.
You know, and don't be surprised if your partner says potentially hurtful statements. They don't necessarily know the language to use. They don't know the language to find hurtful. And they won't necessarily know that something they're saying might be hurtful to you. They also might not know that something that they're saying might be really exciting to you. You know, that you haven't had the opportunity to discuss that thing that would both really get you going. So it's trying to provide that safe space. So if you can communicate about your kid, about the way you're living, etc., just try and bring that into the sexual space. And talking about sex with your partner is super sexy. You know, it really gets people turned on hearing about it as well as looking at it. The other thing I'd probably suggest is locking doors behind you, putting Vaseline on the doorknob, training your dog not to come into the bedroom, and think the other times in bedtime. You know, use your relatives, use your mum or whoever can take the baby for an hour or something. You know, but don't put pressure on yourself. That hour is for you to be together. It doesn't necessarily have to lead to sex.
Yeah, I remember I remember I did an NCT class, and to be honest with you, most of it was not that useful. But one of the things she said was, when you are ready to have sex again, make a sort of a date or a night of it where the baby isn't there, because then you won't have that distraction in your head, and you'll be sort of more like a bit calmer, a bit more relaxed. And also, like, your husband's not, you know, if he hears a baby crying halfway through, it can actually really throw you both off, and then you can have sort of bad feelings about it and then not want to do it again. So it's like about taking all of the distractions.
So when lockdown's over, that's the first thing we need to do. Book in. Hello. Come and get the kids, please.
Yeah, drop the kids off.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Yeah, that was absolutely amazing. I just think you're so, wasn't that incredible, Georgia? I feel like I've learned so much.
Absolutely. It's about, you know, changing the dynamic and the way you think about it.
So just one last thing I would say, sorry, if you don't mind, is just, if you are able to do something with your partner that's not something you'd usually do, so to do something novel with your partner that's not sex-based, you will actually see them in a new light. You will have a new memory of them, and that's actually people who do new things with their partner that isn't sex-based have more satisfying sex lives, and they rate their partners higher. So actually, just doing, you know, even if you're in lockdown and you're stuck there, just try and do other things with each other, because even if it might not allow you to be fully sexual in that space, having these new memories about each other and seeing each other in new light is actually a really potent way of making you think more positively of your partner.
Oh, I love that.
Brilliant. Anand, thank you so much for coming on. It's been an
absolute joy.
Pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
Have you started drinking? Are you okay?
Well, considering we recorded that at 10 a.m, it probably would have been a bit worrying if I did start drinking. But no, it was fine. It was fine. As long as people don't ask me about my own sex life, I don't care. I can talk about sex. It's not about me.
Yeah, and I really respect you for that. Listen, it's not, you know, it's not for everybody, and it's a really personal thing, and you don't need to go shouting it from the rooftops. But what I found really fascinating about that chat is how knowledgeable he was. I mean, outer course. Have you ever heard
of it? No, absolutely not. It's like first course, second course, outer course. That's a whole new thing.
But also vulva gazing. My mind has been blown since we had that chat. And Dom keeps going, when are we going to be vulva gazing? And I'm like, oh, I'm not sure I'm ready for you to stare at my fanny.
No, I don't know if I can do that. I mean, it's actually a great idea, isn't it? In principle, like, yeah. I get it. Like, just if you're naked all the time and you're showing everything a lot, it becomes less daunting. You're more relaxed. Get that completely, but maybe I won't call it vulva gazing. I might need to call it something like less intimidating.
Fanny investigating. No, I loved it. I took away so much from that, and I also really loved how he kind of, you know, discussed, you know, like, just everything about the female form and all of the sort of nerve endings and, you know, not being able to potentially communicate with your partner. You know, we're quite happy to tell our partner to go to the supermarket and get a list of things for us, but when it comes to pleasuring us, we find it really uncomfortable in certain cases. I think that whole communication thing that he was screaming about was just fascinating and absolutely the start point for anybody that's struggling to kind of get that sort of, I don't know, the sexual appetite going again within the
relationship. Yeah, exactly. You've got to say how you feel, because, you know, men, women aren't mind readers. So it's much better to just say, you know what, I just don't feel confident in myself, or, you know, going through labour has really made me a bit scared of doing this, doing that, or I'm uncomfortable with how I look. I guess you just got to lay all your cards out so you know exactly where you're both at.
And it was really interesting, because everything that he was saying, I was nodding my head to. You know, I went through years of pain with Dozer after the babies. You know, every time we'd have sex, I would get pain. And it's very hard to you sort of go through the motions, don't you? And you kind of, you know, I'd come to the end of it and be like, oh, that's really painful. And I've had certain incidents where it's been so painful we've obviously had to stop, and it's only now that pain has subsided that I've really started to enjoy it again. So I will say to anybody that's listening that's like, every time I have sex it's painful, it does get better. Definitely go and see your GP if you're worried about it, which is what I did. But yeah, giving birth is a trauma. So
yeah, exactly. Yeah, absolutely. You mean, if you were in a car crash, you wouldn't be expected to run the marathon like 2 weeks later, would you?
So no. Take it easy. Out of course, all the way.
Out of course, absolutely. Much better.
So yeah, so if you are a kind of first time listener to the podcast, we have spoken about this subject before. We spoke to blogger Kerry Northcote about sex, and that was brilliant. She kind of went in a little bit harder, didn't she? There's no filter with Kerry, which I love.
No, absolutely not. It was a completely different chat as well. It was more about self-pleasure than anything, I guess.
Yes.
But also, you know, like body confidence, which plays a massive part in sort of getting your sex life back. We spoke to Kimberly Walsh about that.
Well, we've done Georgia Jones. She spoke to us about relationships and how to keep your relationship alive and like the little things that she does with Danny. And we also spoke to Natalie Lee, who's a massive Instagrammer, about finding your identity after children. So we've got, in fact, today's episode is our 70th episode.
I cannot believe it.
I can't believe it either. So if you do want to go back and kind of have a look at all the eps that we've done before, there's loads of great material for you there that will help you. Enjoy.
Definitely. Yeah, and even if you've listened before, go back and listen again. I do that quite a lot.
And me.
Go back and listen to my favourite episodes. So on Tuesday, we've got Jo Wicks on the podcast, which we were over the moon about, and another guest that we've managed to get because of lockdown, which is brilliant.
The body coach is coming onto the podcast. I mean, the world's PE teacher, the busiest man on the planet, Mr. Motivator. We've got him. We sat down with him. We've had the conversation. It was absolutely brilliant. We're talking all about nutrition, his relationship with Rosie, Wean in 15, which is his new book. It's coming out in about a few days' time, I think, actually. So yeah, Tuesday's going to be a massive day for us, and make sure you are tuned in for that one.
Yeah, and please do drop us a message at Made by Mamas or on Zoe's own channel at Zoe Hardman, and we will see you on Tuesday.
Have a great weekend. See you.
Thanks for listening to the podcast. We know times are very difficult right now, and if you want any more information about coronavirus, go to nhs.uk/coronavirus.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.